Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. We're your hosts, Bobby Temps.
And Danny Hogan.
And we're back for one of our hosts-only episodes. And this season, we are going to be much more consistent with them. So one on the first Monday of every month. And it's nice to be back. Having had 2 months away, I wasn't sure if I'd remember how to do this show. I had to just like check off mic, like, wait, how do we start these episodes again? But, you know, having done a few interviews recently, it's been so nice. Yeah. And I think now that we're doing season two, I'm like, okay, the format works. I know what I'm doing. I feel so much more like at ease with it. Because sometimes when you explain it to the guests, the format and the like telling a dating story and the rule of the game and the fact that I'll give them points and the bit that we record after the episode for the subscribers, like, it can sound quite convoluted. And then actually when you get into it, it flows quite well.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to think about one of your favourite moments of season one? I'm putting you on the spot, I guess.
Oh.
Normally we plan a bit of this before we start recording, but yeah, anything stuck out?
There's quite a few. I think I personally think I learned so much more about myself than I expected. You know, I've said to you a few times, I didn't think it would be the dating podcast rather than the mental health podcast, where I'd be like, oh, I'm learning all these things and they're stressing me out. And so, yeah, definitely learning that there's a lot of work I need to do in terms of like my confidence in relationships and my feelings around like belonging in them, I guess, which I'm learning is quite a common experience. And even a lot of the guests that I've interviewed who are like in long-term relationships or marriages, I'm still hearing a similar sentiment from them a lot, where they're like, oh, I guess I don't really sort of ask them too many questions about how we're doing because I don't want them to be like, oh, well, actually, I've decided that you don't belong. And, you know, I'm glad that you asked. I've been meaning to break up with you. And so that's kind of reassuring to learn in a way, to be like, oh, okay, so, you know, here I am maybe naively assuming going into this that the people in the long-term relationships are the ones that would have the most to say and the most advice to pass on. And no, it's us single people that are really thinking about this and analysing everything so much more. And when you're in something long-term, you have a certain comfort of not worrying about everything that person does.
Yeah, absolutely, you're right, Bob, because being in a long-term relationship myself, you don't always, I mean, I think I'm a bit different. You don't generally think maybe so much about it. Just roll on a bit with it. And when you're single, you might check yourself a bit more, think about what you want, things that you like, things that you don't like, and almost initiate them or put them into practice or make decisions that are proactive. Yeah. When you're in a long-term relationship, you tend to start to become reactive, unless you're in one of those amazing couples that really are like on the same path with all of this and can sit down and say, it's been 5 years, it's been 10 years, what do we want now? I'm this, I've changed, you know, I'm going to all this stuff that doesn't always work well from my experience with friends and other people that have been in long-term relationships. I don't want to genderize it. I'm putting a caveat in place there. But it tends to be, especially for my friends who are in mixed relationships, it tends to be the men who are just happy to kind of keep going, and the women who are stopping and checking what's happening in the relationship. I don't know whether that's because they've got single mates that they talk to more and they're like, oh, she seems to be having fun in this single world, or she's demanding this or she wants that. Why aren't I? Just because I'm in a relationship, you know?
Yeah, and I think there's definitely something to that. And I think it even comes out with a lot of the guests I've talked to so far, where there is that increased emotional burden on women when it comes to relationships. And it sort of reminds me of like that Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie TED talk, you know, the one, We Should All Be Feminists, which people may know better from being sampled in a remix of Flawless by Beyonce.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, she talks about how women are raised to aspire to marriage and family in a way that men are more commonly encouraged, primarily of like, what's your job going to be? You know, and obviously there's crossover, but I think that still very much exists. There is a different amount of pressure on different things from a young age. Yeah.
Well, 100%, I think, and my sister's a prime example of not wanting to get married and not wanting to have children. And then you go, you know, she's 32, and then you go to, you know, we went to a friend's wedding at the weekend, like her best friend, got married, and it was, you know, amazing. But all their friends were there, and, you know, generally everybody's married of her age or getting married this year, or they've had weddings and everything, you know, the whole thing. Location weddings, I think, has been the theme for the last couple of years, you know, on Instagram, Italy, Spain. And Dom's, you know, just doesn't want to. In fact, it's not, it's the kids thing that she definitely doesn't want. The marriage, I don't think she minds so much. And as it happens, living in Spain at the moment, she might have to get married to actually keep her apartment that she's got there, you know. And so that's been interesting as well, because she's with a guy, she's been with him for a few years. They both travel with work. And they've both built, literally built, a beautiful apartment in Tenerife where they live. And then Brexit happens. So now Dom has to only go for 3 months before returning. And she's been living there and doing what she's doing for ages. So now there's this question about marriage. And I know she wouldn't mind me saying this, but he's like, well, we'll just get married. Just because you should. And then you're just here then. You just can have your residency and it's it. And she's a bit like, well, I don't know if I want it to just be for that reason. So wouldn't you get married, wouldn't you propose anyway? So they're going through this like in a fun way. It's nothing serious between them at the moment. I think she should just do it. And then they can have a romantic wedding another day when it happens, you know?
Another day out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that's interesting, isn't it? And a girl I work with, the same. They've married for financial reasons. They're together and they love each other, but they've actually got married so that the finances can be sorted, not because it's path that they should take, because that's what society says you should do. I love that.
Interesting. And I guess maybe that balances out a little bit how, for almost every case, it is not helpful to your finances to get married. It's so expensive, you know, particularly the kind of what we're encouraged to think about, you know, I don't mean the registry office, but the whole party that exists around it,
around the wedding.
Yeah,
not the marriage. Yeah. Oh, I know. That's the next thing, isn't it? The actual cost of a wedding. Yeah.
So, so I've been thinking about and reflecting, I guess, a lot on dating and, you know, in our 2 month gap and just a lot of the things I've kind of learned from the guests. And so, yeah, I'm really raring to go back into it. And you asked me about a favourite moment. So I guess it's difficult for me to pin one down, but there's definitely like a few guests that I just think I like really hit it off with. Like Olga Koch was, I think, one of the ones like early on where I was like, oh, we think the same. Like,
yeah.
I really feel like I'm on your level with things. I think talking to Shelf and Alison Spittle were experiences because they were just so full of energy and they were quite chaotic but very fun interviews. Yeah. I love talking to, I guess my, you know, it's proper like primary recency memory is now, I'm telling you all the ones at the start and the end. But Christopher MacArthur Boyd, I loved his stories of, you know, trying to work out, having a chat with a friend about whether he might be gay or not whilst they're both swimming naked on holiday. And just the like strange visual of like, how do you end up in that situation? So, yeah, I think I really love a lot of those stories, or like Elf Lyons talked about going up the, what was it, the Millennium Dome on a date. So like strapped to it, and then this guy is trying to kiss her, but doesn't realise he's interrupting a wedding proposal.
Oh my God.
Or a marriage proposal. You know, so it's fun hearing the stories and being like, it's pretty weird all round.
Yeah, and I think that's great for us, because having done mental, you know, so for me to ask you that question, what was, you know, one of your kind of standout moments, your kind of first response being quite a reflective one about what you've learned, which I think says it all and how great that's been, because you've given yourself to dating games in a different way, or maybe opened up, you know, opened yourself to learn more in a different way than perhaps you do on mental, because maybe you can relax into the moment and be open to the learning. And that might come more subconsciously maybe with mental, because you primarily care about the guest, care about the content, what for the listeners, to make sure that we're delivering a show that is how we want it to be in terms of ethically.
Yeah, it's more research-based, isn't it? So we've got to go in and know what we're talking about, at least to a certain extent. You know, if we're bringing in an expert guest, then of course I'll, you know, very much let all our guests lead the conversation. But I've still got to be there to make sure, like, the language is appropriate and we explore the topic thoroughly, whereas this one's a lot more chatty. So I can sort of sit back and reflect more in the moment and be less of a producer and be more of an audience member a little bit.
Yeah, a bit freer.
Yeah, which is fun. And yeah. I get to meet such fun people. And yeah, so excited about season two. Got a lot of very cool guests on the way. And then also we should mention another thing that's changing, not just a new season, but also a new home for me, because I'm moving to Dublin for 6 months.
Oh, I'm just excited every time you say it, whether it's on mental, whether it's just on the phone, now on dating games. I'm just so excited for you. And I wonder what that will bring in the world of dating games.
Indeed. Well, yeah, so I've mentioned it, like you say, on mental already. It was something I had to kind of like keep under wraps for a little bit. And so, yeah, now it's really happening. So moving late September, and we'll obviously continue the show and, you know, maybe have more Irish guests. But obviously we've, through the pandemic, got so used to recording digitally. Anything's possible. It doesn't have to change that much. So yeah, it'll be fun. I'll get back out into not only dating, but also dating somewhere else. And, you know, really kind of live in the cultural differences that I'm used to, like certain cultural differences being here. Mm-hmm. And instead being like immersed in my culture, but also I've not dated there. So yeah. That'll be an interesting contrast to be like, oh, this country is such home to me, and you know, where I'm living and everything is so familiar, that area, but also I've not dated her, and that's a whole different thing.
Wow, yeah, that'll be interesting. And I think this is a stereotype, but from my experience, these Irish men and women are just so friendly and open. So I feel like, you know, I'm hoping, not for you to find somebody, but for anybody, you know, going to Ireland, like there's just more opportunity, like offline, just to meet people, friends and all sorts of people, like just a new kind of world that people will just chat more in bars or restaurants or just generally. It feels like the dating world is limited at the moment. I watched something the other day, though, and it did make me think, no, there's hope for humanity besides digital platforms. Because the guy is some, like, dating guru. I should remember his name, in the States. And he was talking about, you know, don't forget, and I was telling my single friends, that the opportunity to meet someone is everywhere all the time. You know, that we've gotten used to kind of, right, planning on swiping, I might go on Tinder tonight because I've got a bit of time. I'm sick of it, but I might just give it a go, because if I don't, I'm out of it. You know, a couple of my friends have been like, it just feels like such hard work. And that's because now it seems like there's a structure to it, because they decide they're going to pick up their phone and go on an app. And maybe sometimes their eyes aren't as wide open, just day to day, minute to minute in life. He was like in a petrol station, a coffee shop, walking down the street. You know, we forget to look at people like we used to, and have that lingering look, and maybe look back and think, are they looking? And then somebody might go, hi, what's your name? Or whatever. That's what I remember being single many years ago, how it was. So even for me now, if I came out into the single world, it'd be weird that that doesn't really happen as much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. There's a weird kind of, I guess, what feels like social safety in the apps, because you've both, like, particularly something like Tinder, you've both swiped on each other. And so there's that initial, like, okay, there must be some kind of level of attraction here. Mm. And then I think you can maybe get too reliant on that sort of safety net.
Yeah.
And even still, people aren't necessarily that chatty. You know, plenty of people hardly ever message first. And so I'm not even sure that that's entirely working. But no, I think you're right. There's definitely that reputation that people are very chatty in Ireland. And I definitely, I think, fit a lot of those stereotypes on more the kind of nosy end of the spectrum. But, you know, I find it serves me well in my work, and I like understanding people.
It's all research.
Yeah, it makes me a good interviewer. It's fine. Might make me a bit intense on a date, so I have to dial it back a little bit. You know, let them ask me some questions. But yeah, it'll be interesting. But no, I think you're right. We've got out of that habit. But I do kind of hope, and also think it's possible, that that'll come back from going through the pandemic a bit, that people are just so sick of digital connections. You know, I know there's a, like, I'm not rushing back to nightclubs, but I know a lot of people are. And I certainly was rushing back to, like, restaurants and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, so maybe there will be more of that sort of eagerness to connect in person.
Yeah. So in Ireland, it would just be, oh, just thinking about the wedding I was at last weekend, like, the girl's Irish, so all her family and were there, obviously, and it was just so at the end of the wedding, I've got to say this, just as people were clearing out, getting in the taxis at the end, I think it had been going on obviously from before the end, but just through this little door into another room, they'd hired a restaurant, all the Irish family and friends were sat singing, and I was literally moved to tears just by their connection and their tradition that felt so natural from, literally they'd all just pulled up a chair. They weren't singing like pissed in a pub, like singing. They'd all had a drink probably, but it was just from like a 10-year-old girl sat there quite happily being part of this social thing that seemed familiar to her, and a 90-year-old granddad and everybody in between, just their turn to sing. And then somebody else would sing an Irish song, you know, and then they'd all join in and start clapping and singing, and then they'd all fidget around and say, who's going to sing this? Oh, sing that. And then somebody else go, okay, I'd sing. And I just thought, wow, like what a tradition, and how amazing just to witness that, that, you know, from a British point of view or even Caribbean, you know, my other side, you just wouldn't get that of all ages being really cool and open to just literally sit and sing like to each other. The bride then comes in her dress. She sits and joins in and listens to granddad and auntie and uncle and cousin. And honestly, Bob, and having Irish in me and not being familiar with it, I was just like thinking, oh God, I've got to go to Ireland and find my family. But it was an amazing moment. Like I was, you know, I just had to mention that because honestly, I think out of the whole wedding, I was so emotionally moved by that.
No, that's so lovely. And yeah, there's definitely that real pull of family. And I think that's part of what I'm feeling. Like I'd wanted to go over for a while and spend more time there, having kind of not got to visit as much in my adult life. Whereas when I was younger, I was, you know, back and forth and kind of spending a lot of time living with family at various points. And, you know, where I'm staying was my grandparents' place on my mum's side. Mm. So it does feel like a kind of homecoming. And I think, you know, the pandemic has really sort of made me itch for that.
Yeah.
And like miss the culture even more.
But now it's been turned into like the most cool pad you've ever seen. So you're going to be like living in the hottest spot, having, oh, such an amazing time, meeting loads of new friends, people, looking forward to some new guests. Just so excited for a new chapter for you. I don't personally think 6 months is long enough. I'm like, you need to keep your ass there for longer than that. What are you coming back for? 6 months is only like Jan, Bob. It's like around the corner. We'll see.
Wow, you and my mum are seemingly on the same side.
Oh
yeah, she would like me to properly stay. I think it's partly then she might have an excuse to move over herself when she retires. But yeah, I'm excited for it. Got to set up my whole recording setup over there and get to grips with it all. You know what as well I was thinking about the other day? I think it'll be nice to sort of have a bit of a refresh with dating, because I think sometimes I have been guilty of being a bit lazy with it. And what I mean by that is sort of like going to the same kind of places. Mm-hmm. And that's meant to be one of the things you don't do, because you want the sort of newness as to be part of like what sets up the date for success. Mm. Whereas I think maybe I've been cynical in the past and I've been like, oh, well, you know, suggest some restaurants that I think are really cool, and then at least I'll have a good meal, or, I like their mocktails, or, you know, whatever else. And so actually going into this environment where I don't know as many of the places I would go for a date, I'll have to sort of explore and other people suggest places and
being a bit uncomfortable and perhaps
and like nice and collaborative on it. I think I'm used to people just assuming that I'll be the one to like choose the date and be in charge of a lot of the logistics, however I give that impression.
Which you do, don't you, though?
Yeah, which is true, but it'll be fun to kind of like explore new places with new people.
Yeah.
Refresh, because I don't know if you're getting this, but I've been very excited in some ways to get back to life, and then in other ways it can be a little bit underwhelming, you know, that whole thing of like Freedom Day, you know, was it like, you know, I didn't feel hugely safer one day to the next really at all. But, you know, now we're gradually getting there, whereas this is a thing of I get to go and so many of the restrictions are lifted, and, you know, it feels like a different kind of freedom to be like, okay, I get to explore. There's still masks and stuff like that, but I don't know. I don't think I know how to explain that yet. I think it's just something about maybe living in a city centre and then seeing everything shut down and then it gradually reopen. It sort of takes the novelty out of it maybe a little bit for you, whereas like you come into the city, you see what's changed and it's all a bit more novel, whereas maybe it all feels a bit slower pace.
100%. I know what you mean. You are explaining it well. And when you go there, it'll be totally fresh and new and open. Rather than, as you said, the novelty would go a little bit if you've kind of drip fed into whatever this freedom kind of day means. You see a little bit of the city or the town that you're moving to, and then you can get on a tram, but you need your mask on, and that restaurant's not open, or that is, but you have to book it, and social. Whereas now you better go and just give it into, you know, there's a few little restrictions, but not really. You'll be able to go in and just really enjoy it and find the places and the things that you love. That was another top tip. You know, find the places, and you love comedy and comedy clubs and that whole scene, and, you know, go into places that you love. You know, you, at least you know the people there are also there because they enjoy those things. So there's already a connection.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. So I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing how dating kind of evolves, because I think, you know, maybe everyone's had a bit of a chance to reflect. And actually, as strange as it's been, launching the podcast in the middle of the pandemic, and as much as I've folded it in as a sort of silly in joke, because it is strange, but also the show was ready, so in some ways it made sense. It has been interesting to like have that time to sort of reflect with a step back, not have the sort of maybe some of the emotional impulsiveness that can come of like, okay, I need to make a decision about this date, yeah, because otherwise, you know, it's going to be too long. Maybe some of that pressure was lifted a little bit, and I think a lot of people got to look at relationships they're in or relationships they want and have a bit of a think about what that means. Also, a lot of people have had breakups, so
I know
the single pool, I think, has definitely expanded.
It's definitely expanded. And what will be cool, I think, is that the guests now for season two will talk about, hopefully, potentially quite things that have happened like last week, like a lot of season one, because it was in the pandemic, stories were, it was nostalgic and there were stories from their pasts, or I went on one date once that was this, and not that people won't do that, those stories are great, but you might have some quite instant stories from like, oh my God, last weekend this happened, and they'll seem fresh and
yeah, we might have to check in with people and be like, just let us know.
Okay. Yeah. Or the guest will, won't they? And I went on this date with this guy. Oh, better not say that in case he's listening. But yeah, I think that will be interesting as well. Season two will take a complete twist in terms of, one, the pool's much bigger. The single pool is bigger. And people have had lots to probably think about, contend with, and breakups. But two, yeah, quite familiar dating experiences to people.
Yeah. And I think coming into September, people are feeling more ready to get out there. You know, it is feeling a bit more like, oh God, we need something other than the new normal. We were talking about the new era on our other show, but I think people are feeling more comfortable now. And that's nice, because there's nothing quite like fear of giving somebody a potentially deadly virus to sort of really make you question every action on a date.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to that being less and less a thing.
100%. Also, thinking about a lot of the things that have happened this year that have been traumatic may end up being positive in some cases. For example, equal rights. For example, Black Lives Matter and campaigning that went on through that. I'm hoping, especially through some of the work that I've done this year, people are more interested in meeting different people from different backgrounds. Not everybody, and we know that that group can stay where they want to stay, but a lot of people are quite open and have not been maybe as fearful, or learning to not be as fearful to ask questions about other people's ethnicity or religion or background and what that might mean, sexuality. I think that might also lend itself to a whole new dating pool for some people.
And I think people have had a chance to take a look at some of their behaviours and, you know, their dating past and what they want their dating future to be. Other people haven't, you know, and I definitely found some frustrations. I think we talked about this a bit off mic recently, of how, like, I was trying to work out what was going on because I was feeling a bit sort of emotionally exhausted by people. And I was like, is it that I'm frustrated because some people have really worked on themselves and some people haven't? And they're complaining about sort of pre-pandemic thing. Like an acquaintance was complaining the other day that she like really wants a dog, and I'm like, we've had the time. Everybody's had a new pet, seemingly.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sort of like, I don't know if that feels like a problem compared to what some people have been going through at all. And, you know, so I think there was an element of that, but I think it was more so like the emotional overwhelm of like being out among people again and like hearing about what's going on for people and all this information and all other people's emotions that we've been sort of cut off from a lot of the socializing.
Mm.
So I wonder if that'll also be a factor in dating of like, okay, who's worked on themselves?
Yeah, that's true.
And who hasn't maybe so much?
Yeah, that would be an interesting conversation, I guess. I think that you're right. Not only the stuff I said about meeting people from different backgrounds or whatever, but that will be interesting in terms of when you meet somebody, although people aren't going to want to bang on about the last 2 years, year and a half, it's how people have dealt with that, have grown from it, will be probably, I know, especially for a lot of my friends, a deal breaker or not, straight away you'll hear the people out there who feel quite entitled or those that don't know or see their own privilege or, you know, all of those things maybe we're awakened to that on a date might make you think,
I know. And yeah. Also, I'm going to have to sort of watch myself that I don't, you know, fall into judgment unnecessarily on this stuff, because there is going to be a part of me if I'm like, oh, so, you know, what were you up to? You know, were you on furlough? What was happening for you? And if somebody turns around and they're like, oh, yeah, I was just on furlough. I just kind of sat around. I don't know if that's going to make me more invested in them. It's me putting it politely. So it'll be interesting, those kind of contrasts. But then also it's been a very traumatic time. And so people have needed the time to process it. I hope they've done that. I guess is what I would say. But they've found some time for that among the Netflix, which I've definitely been catching up on myself. Yeah. So no judgment on the Netflix front. But yeah, it'll be curious. And also, yeah, how we all do with like this fear of like, oh, have I lost my social skills?
No.
Seemingly I've still got them, even if I felt a bit kind of overwhelmed at times. But do I still have my dating skills? Well, then we'll have to find out.
I mean, I am a bit concerned about that, because for mine, it's like my social skills, I reckon, are still there, but they generally, embarrassing it is to say, wine helps a lot with that for me. I don't even, that's just my little bonus treat that I've enjoyed over lockdown, having a couple of glasses of wine as soon as I could with the girls. But work-wise and being out there just day-to-day and navigating, you know, the social world will be, I did go to a festival the other day. And this guy, like, my guy was standing near me with and the kids, and then this guy, he was dancing, and I did what I normally have always done, and he was quite cool, and so I, like, did a bit of a dance with him. Like, it wasn't I didn't dance with him, but I kind of, like, mimicked his movement a bit. And then the next minute...
Why have I got this vision of you, like, two crabs, like, going back and forth in front of each other?
God, we were a bit... I just kind of was like, because he was so energetic and like really brought the party. Mm-hmm. I just love people that are in their own world, especially at festivals. It's like he was just in his own vibe and just really enjoying life, you know. And I just kind of, I guess, wanted to like honour that and like show him that that was appreciated, that he brought this vibe over to kind of our area. And but then he comes over and he's like chatting. I was so embarrassed then. Like, and I thought, I'm not used to this, and I'm probably not used to it because I've not been out for 18 months, even just to bat him off. And like Anthony was there. And
so coming over with the flirting.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Like, hey, he put his hand out. And if that was it, he put his hand out for me to like take it. Even now I'm telling you this, you can see I'm blushing. People can't see me, don't know I'm blushing, but I feel embarrassed. He put his hand out and then I had to make a choice. Like, what am I doing? Am I going to hold your hand? You know, it's COVID. COVID actually helped. Because I said, no. I was like, oh, hi, yeah, and kind of patted him on the side. But I didn't take his hand. And I felt really rude then, felt really bad. But then I felt like I had COVID on my side. And then he was like, COVID? You're in the middle of a festival. Like,
what was the festival?
It was a local one in Birmingham. It's called Simmer Dance. It's like a reggae festival. So it's a real family day. Like, the kids were there. It wasn't like... I was at a night festival with the kid on my own with my mates. It wasn't that kind of vibe. So it was comfortable enough that my children were there, like, yeah, everyone was there, so it wasn't a threatening moment. I didn't feel like, mm-hmm, oh my God, but in that moment when he said, what do you mean COVID, I had to then say something back. I was just like, no, but I'm just like, I'm happy, like, just dancing. It was really in my face a bit, like, not in an intimidating way, but like, it came over
very direct.
Yeah. Yes. And then, like, I was like, I don't know why I said something about Anthony or tried to, like, divert his attention. I was like, I'm, or something. And then he was like, hi. And I was like, oh, I don't know what I said. Something really embarrassing about my boyfriend or some shit. And then he was just said hi, and we all kind of was high and dancing, and then he went. It was fine. But in that moment, like, and even funny that my children were there, like, they actually saw, probably, well, for the first time, like, someone chat mum up. Because even Ella, my older daughter, who's 10, was, like, in the moment with me. And she was a bit like, who's this guy? Like, what's going on? She kind of didn't realise what was going on. But, yeah, it's the fact that he put his hand out. And you know when there's, like, a group of people and there's a space? He came into our space. He came into the space that I was on the edge of, and that really launched his hand out to me so everybody around could see. That was what made it worse. He didn't, like, slide next to me and, yeah, like, put his hand next to mine. It was a real obvious direct movement. And I just died. I blamed it on COVID. And he looked at me like, are you fucking joking? You're in a festival with, like, 1,000 people. But yeah, so just talking about social skills, I felt like I didn't handle that situation very well. Now, it could have been the kids, or it could have been the fact that I've not been out for so long.
Well, interesting. And you know what? You've kind of reminded me of a bit of chat I had with Charlie George, one of the guests I spoke to yesterday. And I can't remember if this is in the subscriber exclusive bit or the main episode. So here's some context. Basically, we were talking about how, like you said, we quite like the idea of people, like, still approaching each other in public and still kind of showing interest and just kind of turning up in that way that feels very organic, in a way that even the best app still feels kind of clunky. And what are any of us doing swiping?
Yeah.
This weird game of faces on our phone.
Yeah.
And I kind of had a realization about it as we were talking and was like, oh, well, also, though, I think we're both biased on this because me and her are both very direct people.
Mm.
And so for us, it really appeals. But then it's almost like a bit of a paradox of, like, okay, we're very direct people. So a lot of the time people expect us to make that kind of move.
Yeah.
And so generally, I don't find that people are coming up to me and, you know, trying to chat me up or, you know, hold my hand randomly after dancing with me. But then equally, I wouldn't want to make anyone feel awkward of me going in really direct. It's tricky. And then, like you say, COVID is another factor of, like, everyone can have a different perspective on it.
Right, don't come too close. If you've got your vaccine passport, do you know what I mean? Holding hands with people that you don't know. That feels quite strange. I think it was that moment.
It kind of feels more intimate.
It does. If somebody whispered in my ear, I wouldn't be overly close, but I wouldn't mind, you know, if somebody came. I wouldn't think, oh, the breath, are you going to give me COVID? But somebody to hold out their hand and for me to hold somebody's hand.
Isn't that so interesting? Because then it's not even just the COVID, it's like the COVID-related behaviour.
Yes.
So it's... we're not used to that kind of tactileness and therefore it feels more intimate as opposed to it just being about safety at this point.
Thought about it like that.
No, I think that's true though. And I think, you know, there is that kind of moment because I was over in Dublin, as you know, for a few days, sort of checking out the flat, making sure everything works. And I went via my aunt's place in Edinburgh. And, you know, even just funny catching up with a few of her friends and everyone sort of checking with each other a little bit, like, are we doing hugs now? Like, yeah. Are we not?
Yeah.
And then it's sort of like, it does feel closer because you're like, oh, I've not hugged this person in 2 years. And you, when else are you making that kind of a calculation?
You never are.
And so I think we've all been reminded about it. And so here I am trying to make predictions and I'm like, honestly, anything could happen. People could go in cautious or people could be like, I've had a long dry patch. Yeah. Who am I getting with now?
Yeah, absolutely.
It could go one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's going to be an adventure this season. I'm looking forward to it. I'm still, believe it or not, I'm still trying to, like, figure out some of the things of format. I'm not entirely sure. You know the points that we award? Part of me is not sure if that's a little bit too clunky, that, like, sometimes I do have to sort of, like, take a pause and sort of a bit interrupt the flow of the conversation in order to award points. And then sometimes that can distract from me saying, you know, the follow-up question I was going to ask them and that kind of stuff. But the first few I've recorded, I've been giving points.
Right.
And we'll see if the gamers hear me not giving points. That might be because I've talked to my producer and we've agreed that he'll award some of them.
Yeah. Because, and do you want to just explain the points for the people that might just be joining us for season two?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're great fun to explain because they don't really mean much. basically, I award points to some of the guests based on impactful things they say, or sometimes it's a funny story or a silly way of phrasing things. We don't count them. Sometimes the guests get a bit competitive or they're counting them themselves. I remember when I talked to Stuart Goldsmith, I realised in the interview I hadn't explained the points to him before. And so he was like, oh, how many points do I get? Like a few hundred? I was like, oh. Because normally, well, yeah, because we know what the sound effects sound like, yeah. Obviously. But Pete puts those in afterward. So it's sort of just this silly thing. And some of the guests react to them and like, oh, yay. And then others are like, oh. So it's just a silly thing we do to stretch the metaphor of it being dating games.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. But yeah, definitely there were a few episodes where I like forgot to award points, which because I was so engaged in the conversation.
Yeah.
So we'll see about that. Other things are definitely staying. And I think this is what I enjoy. I think if that was a way to sum me up, I think I enjoy talking about dating and hearing people's stories at times more than I enjoy being relationship.
Yeah, well, don't blame me, Bobby, to be honest. And it's funny because I've enjoyed living a single life through all of my friends and now through dating games. So I've got now two outlets that provide me with stories and experiences that flip me into the single world every now and again after so long in a relationship. So I love that, best of both worlds. Yeah.
It's going to be fun. Episodes one every Friday, like before. We'll have the host episodes once a month where we'll kind of summarise some things we've been reflecting on, probably talk about some dates I've been on recently, and just, yeah, a chance to expand a little bit more on things that come up in the episodes. And then, yeah, we'll continue on through to July again and have another 2-month break, I think. As long, you know, as long as enough people listen and some people subscribe, then we'll keep it up. Season 3. It'll probably come round before we know it.
Yeah. And you'll still be in Ireland.
We will see.
Every time I say that, Bobby rolls his eyes and say, don't start. Okay, I know. And I'm like, Bob, you've got to stay in Ireland a bit longer than
No, but also, to be fair, it does make more sense to have it this way, like keep the expectations low.
Yes.
And then people are like pleasantly surprised, hopefully, yeah, and invested in me staying longer rather than it being like, oh, you're back already.
Yeah, that's true. Even for yourself, though.
Wasn't all that.
Yeah, even for yourself. You give yourself 6 months and then if it doesn't work out quite well, you're always coming back in 6 months anyway.
Yeah.
That's true. I like your thinking.
I know. And now you've got me thinking about the dauntingness of all the stuff I need to move. So I think we'll wrap up there. Before I get in my head about that, thank you for the chat as always, and we'll do another one next month.
Oh, I love it. See you soon.
See ya.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.